Hey there. Glad you could make it. Have a seat. Now, I know you're not here to see me as much as you are Wansu, and I don't blame you. It's not every day you have access to a Taoist sage. While I'm in an expanded and relaxed state, Wansu can communicate with me, and through me. No, I won't start talking in a funny voice, but I will share what he wants me to say to guide you into greater awareness. Sometimes he's funny, oftentimes he's compellingly dramatic, and he likes to challenge me with a glint in his eye, and yet he is always poised to teach and to create a rich curiosity about the nature of personal reality. Sounds good, right? Well, it's actually been life-changing. I mean, I have a spiritual teacher from the Tang Dynasty of the 7th century, and according to him, he's still alive there. Just think of the implications. He's taught me the art of balance and harmony, about receiving divine guidance through intuition and synchronicity, which I gather you'd like to experience as well. He says that the universe paired us up in order to help people move along the path of knowledge and spirituality more fluidly. Why don't I tell you the story of how I met Wansu? I was exploring a nature trail near Flagstaff, Arizona one time, hiking through a pristine pine forest that led up to a peak. I thought I'd manage to get up there and enjoy the view before the sunset. I got up there just in time to find a rock to sit on and see the sun setting. It was showering the valley below me in rich golden beams. I was enjoying how the light glistened off the treetops and taking in the different rock formations with their reddish hue. The air was cool with a slight breeze and a crisp pine fragrance to it. I had a few things on my mind, including the direction my life was taking and which direction it should be taking. As twilight set in and I was thinking about connecting to my spiritual values, my sense of purpose, I noticed the wind change. Both the sound and the intensity shifted. It was still gentle, but somehow it was warmer and curious, causing the foliage to rustle differently. I took a few deep breaths and honed in on the environment, and then I thought I saw something to my right, silhouetted against the increasing darkness of the landscape. But as I turned to look more intently, I saw nothing there. I took a few more deep breaths and turned my head back the other way, and there he was. About 5 feet away was a man that appeared to be in his 60s, grayish dark hair, about 5'6", and I guessed that he looked Chinese, wearing simple dark brown clothing that looked like something a farmer would wear, like the texture of canvas but finer, with a piece of rope for a belt, and with a few pouches hanging from it. I was held transfixed, as you can imagine, taking in all the details of this man. His skin was smooth, his face kind and likable, although he was seemingly very focused, aware. He had an air about him that conveyed that he was quite competent and possessed a keen wisdom. Now, at this point, I figured that my imagination was having a good time. I mean, I could very clearly see him, but he was in a way superimposed into the environment, almost like a very vivid daydream. But he was there, looking at me with a slight grin and a raised eyebrow. The word maverick came to my mind. As I began to reassure myself that I wasn't crazy and that he was perhaps a ghost or a spirit guide or just my imagination somehow, he raised his foot to rest on the large rock in front of him and I heard him speak. "I know you don't believe that I'm really here." And I was stunned. This suddenly became very real. He continued, "I am here, partially due to your being in an expanded awareness state, and also because I have learned to travel in my other body while I sleep." At this point, I noticed that my mouth was hanging open, trying to formulate a question and failing to do so, and he quietly laughed, shaking his head while watching me this way. And then he said, "I am a retired soldier in Emperor Li Longji's China of the year 724 of your Christian calendar. My name is Wansu." He just stared at me while I was trying to keep from either laughing or panicking. And then he said, "Aren't you going to tell me your name?" This time his mouth hardly moved, but I still heard him just as clear, to which I thought, can this guy possibly be using telepathy on me? Finally, I managed to utter my name in a nervous fashion, to which he replied, "Are you sure?" And he laughed heartily. This was so strange and unnerving, and yet I liked this guy. As much as I was also very intimidated by him, it was like he commanded respect and yet was soft at the same time. I began to laugh with him, and this kind of helped me to relax a little, enough to ask him how he knew how to speak English so well. And he shot back with, "And I wondered where you picked up the perfect inflection of the province I grew up in." He grinned and said, "Because we are meeting in the realm of expanded consciousness, our experience conforms to our model of the world as a convenience, as we are operating outside of the rigid bounds of normal awareness. Let's say that you are borrowing my rules of reality, and since I am in the dreaming body, dreaming rules apply." I had to take another deep breath and let it soak in. My comfortable expectations of reality were beginning to break down under the weight of what he was saying. I had no reason to doubt him, as he seemed to have a much better grasp than me that he was dreaming, and that the mastery he had clearly attained was enough for both of us to have this incredible interaction. He leaned in and spoke as if revealing a secret to me. "The reason I'm here with you and not on the beach in Fiji, or riding on giant dragonflies someplace, is because the spirit intervened. This is an aspect of what I will refer to as synchronicity." I asked him, "So you didn't choose to meet with me here, it's random?" And he replied, "No, I didn't specifically choose to be here, and it's not random either. I felt the pull of the spirit and allowed myself to be guided, and this is where I showed up." This was getting really deep, to believe that some part of the universe or God wanted us to meet like this, bending the rules of reality in order to make it happen, and I just didn't know what to say. He went on, "What it really means is that you were at a crossroads, in need of a teacher, and I have apparently been selected to be just that. So put that in your pipe and smoke it." Again, he laughed with abandon, so contagious that I had to join in. "We are going to fine-tune your inner compass to know your path and to traverse it with awareness and intention. And I am teaching you about synchronicity because that is how the spirit lets us know we're on target, or at least is saying, 'Hey, go this way.'" While I was trying to grasp what he was conveying, he continued saying, "Now I'm going to tell you about how I first realized the nature of synchronicity." He got closer and he sat on the rock, and somehow he produced a lamp, a clay vessel with a thick wick, and it was lit moments later. But I quickly gave up thinking about how he did that, as the glow illuminated his face to where I could really see his features better. But also, he was more solid. I could no longer say that he wasn't real. He looked flesh and blood. Although I could tell he was an older man, he appeared very youthful and strong. And this contrasted oddly with the experience and knowledge his face revealed. He began, "As I mentioned, I was in the Emperor's army. And about 30 years ago, I was stationed at an outpost near the southwestern border in the area that you would now know as Burma. As we were systematically pushing the border further, we moved camp every couple of weeks, so we had no real fortifications, mainly tents and supply stations, surrounded by a wall assembled with 10-foot wooden poles, with a south-facing gate and a north gate as well. Our advancement usually consisted of absorbing villages and towns by telling them that they were now subjects of the Tang Empire and that local officials would now pay taxes to the Empire. All lords, chieftains, and officials would stay in power under the rule of the Emperor, and some of our guardsmen and officials would take residence there as well. They would be stronger with the Empire, but they would be crushed if they chose to revolt. Occasionally, there were brave men that tried to fight for their people, but it was futile. When we approached larger towns, there were armies to defend their lands, and battles ensued. By that point, we had never failed to seize control, although there were some bloody conflicts. My battalion was off duty in the encampment one evening, and I was sitting with another soldier, Lang. I was tending our campfire while he was preparing hot water for tea. There were torches lit every 20 feet along the inside perimeter of the camp, soldiers stationed near them, and others making account of munitions and otherwise preparing for the next day. Those off duty trying to find whatever comfort they could, including gambling games. I myself was starting to get a handle of Pai Gao, but I didn't play as often as most others. While sitting at the campfire, Lang began to tell me about something that had happened earlier in the day. As he was scouting the Western Territory a couple of hours into the hills, a large blackbird flies in and lands in front of his feet. And then this daring bird begins to hop in a clockwise circle, then a counterclockwise circle, then stopped and chirped while looking up at him, and began the same hopping, one circle, then the other, looks up, chirps, and then flies away. Lang thought this was odd, but also funny. It made him chuckle. I laughed with him, admitting it was funny, but also wondered what the bird was trying to communicate. As the conversation moved on, I told him I had an uneasy feeling that evening, and I kept thinking about the last battle we had. Although we had won and took control of the town, something bothered me about the look in the conquered people's eyes. A defiance shone through that was more than the usual. Lang said that they always have that look, and that I just noticed it more than before for some reason. Later that night, I had trouble sleeping. I kept remembering the faces of the people in the town, containing a wrathful anger that they would find their revenge somehow. As I was becoming restless, I decided to take a walk to calm my nerves. I walked around the quiet edge of the camp for a while, then looked up as I saw a dark bird flying against the moonlit sky. I followed his flight above my head and watched, puzzled, as the bird flew above my head in a large circle. First to the left, then another to the right, and then he squawked, then flew off. I immediately thought of Lang's bird, hopping in an all too similar way. I knew this was not a new trend of birds. It had to be an omen. Some sort of influence from the heavens. Something inside of me suddenly felt compelled to speak to the general about the danger of an ambush attack from the nearby province. Thoughts had been collecting and clarifying as far as what I was nervous about, and it had just become solidified with the bird. General Shen did not like to be bothered and certainly wouldn't have the patience to listen to me go on about a bird. He'd call me a subordinate paranoid, not fit for the army. But I had to say something. Knowing that he did not sleep at that hour, I marched over to his tent and asked the guards for permission to enter and give General Shen some critical information. One of the guards walked in and presented me to the general, and he allowed me to speak. I thanked him for his time, and then asked him if he believed in omens. And he said, "I don't pay much attention to the ways of wandering madmen, but in my family there are some traditions that I am accustomed to observing. For instance, if there is a lunar eclipse within 2 weeks of planting crops, there will be a failed harvest. But what has any of this to do with the Emperor's army?" I answered him that I had a revelation, and that I am not given to blindly believing in superstitions and folklore, but I feel as though there is real consequence to my revealing to him what has fixed itself in my mind. He impatiently said, "I am listening." And so I told him of the entire account, including Lang's bird. At first, he just stared at me a long moment, making me very uncomfortable, hoping I didn't end up without house duty for this. Then he finally spoke, "Wansu, I've known you for a few years now. You're even-tempered and not one to stir up trouble. Something tells me that I should take heed and listen to your appraisal of things. But before we take preemptive action, you must know two things. First, we never had this discussion. And second, if this turns out to be nothing, you'll be on outhouse duty for a week. Got it? I nodded in agreement, silently asking the gods to guide me. He went on, I'll need you to take 10 men to set up stacks of hay in a circle 50 feet outside the camp walls. Stacks every 20 feet, then pour a bowl of torch fuel on each stack. And finally, nestle a short wick fire powder ball into each stack. Then, place these 10 and 10 more men around the inside of our camp, raised on the wooden ramparts. Poised to ignite these stacks with their fire-tipped arrows upon command. Then come up to meet me in the central watchtower. I labored with the selected men as quickly as possible to set up the haystacks, telling the men that General Shen thought we should be a bit more at the ready, so he has set up some drills. He knows the people of this province are stubborn and do not want to become subjects of the Empire, so we need to be more vigilant in our defensive strategies. After about an hour, I went up the tower to find the general, and upon getting up to the landing, he said, Now we wait. At this point, Wansu paused and looked down at his hands, and then looked back up at me and he shook his head back and forth, and with a grin, he said, I had no idea that the course of my life was about to change so dramatically. At this point, I knew that my life had definitely taken on a new direction. This was the most amazing experience of my life. Now, before I finish telling you about the rest of my meeting with Wansu, let's move into the meditation room so we can get settled and move more fully into receptivity. Because in a short while, Wansu will guide you into a deep, expansive state of awareness.